top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 285, The Ritual. Now, this falls under the category of horror film subgenre that is the male bonding, getting away from it all weekend kind of thing.
Indeed,
which,
yep.
As toxic masculinity has become part of the common vernacular.
The national conversation, or the
This is a common trope in this kind of film where the men turn on one another, which is, again, fairly common for victims, but they do so in a way where they challenge one another's sort of cojones and masculinity and balls, and that sort of underpins everything that The Ritual is about. Because the reason for this trip, and there's got to be a reason to get away from it all, is that one member of this guy's friendship group or friendship circle was murdered in a robbery gone wrong in Britain.
Basically, this is a film that came out in 2018, so this is a fairly recent horror movie. And when the film begins, you get a bunch of, I'm going to say lads, because it's taking place in England at the beginning.
Yep.
You get the sense from their conversation, they're old friends that go way back, but they're growing up and they're growing older and they don't have as much time to hang out with one another. So they're talking about their, I guess, annual lads weekend and where they want to go. And
dream destinations.
They talk about Vegas and they talk about Amsterdam, and one guy brings up a hike, and they don't really conclude as to where they want to go, but then one of the gentlemen decides to keep the party going, and he goes into the local convenience store to get some alcohol. Other one said, let's just wrap it up. It's a school night. I think they actually used those exact words.
Yeah, exactly. We're young dads. It's time to call it a night. Mm-hmm. And,
one guy wanted to make it a brunch instead of an evening, but the one that decides to keep the party going goes in, and unfortunately, wrong place, wrong time. He gets slashed, doesn't he? He doesn't get shot. He gets
could have been the wrong place. Must have been the wrong time. Rest in peace, Dr. John. Yeah, it was the wrong place, the wrong time. One member of the party hides behind a bunch of whiskey bottles. And another one, the more milk-toasty character, has his ring. God, I'm spending this awful past tense, the passive voice I'm speaking in. The robbers ask that he hand over his wedding ring.
I know you come from a journalism background and you work as a journalism now, but there's really nothing wrong with passive voice.
What about being passive aggressive? About passive voices?
I don't like people are passive aggressive, but you can use a passive voice. There's no such thing as the aggressive voice.
Okay, well, the robbers want this guy's wedding ring. And I don't know if this is the hill I would die on. I mean, neither of us is married, but would you? I would hand over anything
to spare
my life.
And I would have certainly...
Well, now that you're divorced, is that going to cloud your judgment?
He gave, they said, give us your wallet. He gave up the wallet, not a problem. And that, of course, is much more problematic to lose in your wedding ring in the sense that you listen, your wife's gonna understand.
It down the sink or something.
He gives up his cell phone, but when it comes to his wedding ring, he refuses to give that up. Obviously,
based on the nudging of his friend who mouths to him no from his position, cowering behind. Yes, that's why he blames himself.
I thought he just blamed himself because he was such a coward and he didn't do anything.
Well, there's that too, but he actually contributed, I would say. I mean, depending on
a wedding ring is not that. It's a totem, and I mean, in this movie there are totemic things, but the reality is the wife would understand. It can be easily replaced. You cannot replace a life, and for want of not wanting to lose his wedding ring, his life was snuffed out. So
yeah, I guess he was gonna test their resolve and to say, hey, like, and you can't, there's no reasoning with these kinds of people. You would have figured, though, after they'd gotten all his personal effects of any note, but then again, I mean, that's worth, what is it, a seventh of your salary, a fifth, a quarter. It's something so obscene, what you're supposed to spend on an engagement ring.
Well, you got to remember, and again, an engagement ring, that's a whole 2 month salary bullshit. A wedding ring, it's not that big a deal.
And I guess for a man, it's just a band, right?
It's just a band.
You could get it out of a gumball machine.
It's a couple hundred bucks, really, depending on how, you know, if you want to get it extravagant.
Oh, fuck it, then. These guys are ruthless. That changes everything. Then, man, well, anyway, like, he had no chance to second guess because he's stone dead. And as these guys are like trying to figure out what to do with themselves, like, they're not going to go to Benidorm in the southern Spain like every other Brit to go on a debauched weekend. They're not going to go to Las Vegas, as the Brits call it, instead of Las Vegas.
Well, no, now they Las want Vegas. They want to go on a tour to pay homage to their departed friend. So we fast forward 6 months later, and I believe the friend that was the one that got murdered was the one who suggested the hiking trip. So they find themselves in the Swedish mountainside.
Yeah, and it's not exactly the Sweden that we've come to know and love through pop culture references.
There's no bikini team anywhere.
None at all. They're not traipsing around the cobblestones.
There's no Swedish chef going, "Inga, banga, inga, inga."
They're not wandering the cobblestone, old town square of Stockholm, enjoying beers and dumplings and cheese or whatever. They are in the middle of frickin' nowhere. And it's cold, too. So I wonder why, like, they chose that. Maybe this was the only time they could get away.
Maybe
it's September. Who knows? It doesn't seem pleasant.
Mm-hmm. But they had a specific destination in mind, a place where they could build sort of like a bit of a pyre, a bit of
a tribute,
a shrine, a tribute, etc. What is it called when you take a sip and pour out the... Is there a certain word for that?
And I'm not sure. I only know this from 90s rap videos. Yeah. So I have no other context for it. So they toast their friend, and in the process, water the soil of the whatever locale and waste all their booze on this. But again, they build a collection of rocks, put his photo on top, say their piece, and say he would have loved to have partaken of this journey because, this is a pretty great trip, whatever. A toast to him, the deceased. Soon, though, as is par for the course...
Well, they have to get back now.
Yeah, they're in the woods, and of course, this is not going to be easy. You can't just... You have to have obstacles in your path, and there's more obstacles than just maybe the odd bear, which actually doesn't make an appearance, but what is referenced, and the fact that they could get lost. One of them falls and hurts himself. So, dun-dun-dun. They press him to keep on, and they wrap his knee up in a bandage, and of course...
And he's the one that, right from the outset, he's sort of presented as the most milquetoast member of the bunch.
A la Deliverance with one of the characters who's not Burt Reynolds.
Right.
One of the other
guys. Was that the Ronnie Cox character, perhaps?
Where he's sort of like the doughy, less athletic one, because the rest of them are kind of ripped and like outdoorsy kind of
looking. Ned Beatty would be the doughy, less athletic one.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's the one that suggested the whole brunch thing. He was the one like, come on, lads, grow up, when they wanted to continue the party. Mm. He was a complainer from the very outset, so as soon as he falls and hurts his knee, you as a viewer just going, oh my god, this is going to create a lot of problems, because he's not just a get up and go sort of like walk it off type of guy.
and so he's the least Bear Grylls of the rest of them, let's say, and they're ripping him in good Brit style.
Because but could he grill a bear, I wonder?
Grill, you can indeed. I would eat a grilled bear.
I'd love a piece of grilled bear right now. I'm hungry.
Probably tastes like venison. But as is par for the course in the UK, there's a lot of caustic ripping humor that they really go in for.
A lot of banter, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and they, rip on this guy for his inability to continue, and say, you gotta, suck it up, buttercup, and all this kind of thing, and into the woods they proceed. Mm-hmm. However, I guess the most Bear Grylls among them says, you know what, it's cold, this is not the good time that I'd envisioned. This is a lot more demanding and a lot more rugged terrain than I took it for. This is basically a fjord. Even though it wasn't filmed Scandinavia, this is rugged.
They were going to use a more well-traveled path, but then when, I believe it's Dom. Was it Dom the one that got hurt?
I can't recall, but the gentleman's names are Phil, Dom, Hutch, Luke, and Rob.
Right. Yeah. Rob was the one that got killed, and Luke was the one that feels guilty and feels like his fault. And in fact, he has to be reassured by Milquetoast Dom that it's not his fault, even though Dom kind of insinuated at the beginning that it was. But the one that's the most alpha of the bunch, I would say that would be Hutch, and they want to take a road well traveled to get back to the lodge, but due to the injuries suffered by Dom.
Yeah, it sort of sways their decision making.
To take a shortcut that's a little bit more rugged, but they're going to get back there quicker than they anticipated.
Oh, when will they ever learn?
When they start to see the totems and the runes and the effigies and whatnot, that's when they should have learned. But instead, they decide to hunker in that bunker for that evening.
Hunker in the bunker like a spelunker. But like even, well, 20 years, 30 years pre-GPS, horror people never learn. Shortcuts are never good. Like, just follow the road traveled. Who is it? Robert Frost?
Road less traveled.
But they see off in the distance that their hotel,
their lodge, whatever,
their lodging is like being lit up, and it's on the side of a mountain. And they're thinking, okay, we could get back in time for maybe like, I don't know, bison burgers and pints, and like, yeah, get eat some cheese and put our feet up and get out of this dark, rather austere, ugly, is it stand or strand of trees? Whatever, when they're all, there's like a monoculture of trees. They're all the same type of tree. This is the least appealing forest I've seen since, well, maybe the forest in Japan. Like, this is a creepy auxiliary character in this movie. I mean, I would not want, like, I love the outdoors. I love to camp. I love to canoe. These woods are not appealing to me in any way. Yeah. It's the same type of, it almost looks like a, like they're, it's for the forestry industry or something. Like they're the same type of tree. They're going to cut them down for whatever.
So you think that these woods are less appealing than, let's say, the Blair Witch Woods or?
Oh, considerably so. Yeah. At least there's like biodiversity there, and you could like see being, oh, I'm going to go in there and it's kind of pretty and everything. But this is just
different
dark
types of flora and fauna. Whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. This one is really ugly, and it's exacerbated when they run into, I believe, Is it a buck or an elk? Okay, yeah. So like a reindeer, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's strung up in a tree, almost displayed like a serial killer would do to a
yeah, it was a tableau.
It's a tableau.
And the insides become the outsides, and the thing was completely gutted, and yeah.
And they even speculate that it's not the work of humans, necessarily, that would have done this, which I found really ridiculous. Like, what? Some sort of grizzly bear or something has the manual dexterity to be able to climb a tree and then tie the thing up and truss it up. Like, it is basically in a Jesus Christ pose for them. And then the others point out how ridiculous it is that an animal could have done it, because this has clearly been trussed and is a warning.
And as I said before, soon thereafter, they come across a cabin, but outside the cabin is a tree, and on those trees, carved into it, are these
more warnings.
In fact, I can't remember the language that those runes or totems or whatever were written in, but translated, it actually means property.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you find this out?
IMDb,
you're
of
just,
course.
Oh, okay. You're just pulling that out of my ass. Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say, you're a scholar of Nordic history or something, and you can, you know, name drop all your Norse gods like Odin and Loki and all this.
Yeah.
The showstopper, though, is when they do get to this house, because, again, when you're lost, injured, compounding the
inclement weather,
so it starts pouring rain. So, like, these guys are lost. They're relying on the alpha leader to lead them to the promised land of, you know, happy hour and lodging. But they need to take shelter from the storm. Good Bob Dylan song.
I was going to say.
Yeah, and they come upon this house.
And this is before a hard rain did fall.
Yeah. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
This cabin is creepy as fuck. And I would say the showstopper of this film occurs like fairly early on when they get in there, take shelter, and find in the second level of this rather elaborate home, which
is kind of like
abandoned.
An attic in a sense.
Yeah, it almost reminded me of the Wicker Man. This
without a head.
Yeah, there's this
straw
display, straw display with its arms. You know, it looked like it had been. It's intended to be worshipped.
Well, it's sort of like an anthropomorphic straw figure, or like an effigy, basically meant to represent a human. Only thing missing is the head. Now, at this point, you have to look at your options and say, what the fuck are we going to do? You got a guy who's injured, cold, tired.
You've never pitched a tent in the rain?
Hungry. I've only been camping once in my life when I was 9 years old. Somebody pitched that tent for me.
Oh, I mean, I was going to say.
I can make a very lewd joke right now about pitching a tent.
Up on that.
I can see that you're about to go there, and I'm going to cut you off right now. I'm going to nip you in the bud, Chris. Get your mind out of the gutter. Come on.
Well, pitching a tent, I find, is challenging at the best of times.
Especially for you, man, now you're getting older.
Oh, man, look at this. You lower the bar and then you stoop even lower. With this limbo here. Yeah.
That's okay. Like, you're an expectant father, so it's true. At least a stop clock is right twice in one day, right?
True. So. even like in the light of day, it can be complicated depending on how familiar you are with your equipment. It's just so bad. I know, you're just shaking your head. But yeah, in the middle of a storm, I've only done it once. It's awful. And then you get in, you're already soaking when you're getting into your tent. So mm-hmm. I could see why they would choose to take shelter here. But of course, none of them decides to sleep next to the effigy. Because, you know, why would you? It's creepy as fuck.
Well, why would you stay in a place? I mean, I don't know.
Because you have to. Because you have to. It's abandoned. Mm-hmm. It contains furniture. So you have stuff to burn because outside it's wet.
Right.
You cannot start a fire and it's cold. It's
they
probably the fault.
They couldn't start that fire.
Oh my god!
They did try. Anyway,
BJ reference right there. Billy Joel.
What?
Chris, come on, man. But yeah, the reason they're staying in this lodging.
This is the first episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast to be rated X for innuendo.
they have a bunch of stuff they can burn, so they have no really other choice but to stay in this lodging. And all of them in the night
have horrific experiences.
Horrific nightmares. And the showstopper of this whole film, and I guess this is a spoiler, is when one of the lads ends up naked and prostrating himself.
Prostate is the thing you want to get examined.
Prostrating himself in front of this figure, and his friend comes upon him and say, "Look, mate, what are you doing, man? Like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous."
And he's like, "It wasn't me. It ain't me. I don't know.
It wasn't me." Yeah, you know, like Shaggy. Exactly. And yeah, and it's like, man, that was absolutely creepy. And the way the director handled that scene was great, because one of the, the doughy gentleman is calling out his wife's name, having horrific nightmares. One of them ends up outside, which is, again, par for the course. When you have a nightmare, you end up outside.
Phil is flashing back to the convenience store.
Which was really great, how they managed to marry the urban and rural worlds with this, I guess, like a Tesco or like a 7-Eleven, where you have the grocery aisle, the booze aisle, and it's actually stuck in between the stand of trees. So you have this fantasy nightmare that's coming to play where the death of the guy's friend is coming to haunt him. Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder, like, you know, what is it about the effigy that's maybe spurring this kind of sense of regret and you know, emasculation.
Well, needless to say, everybody wakes up well worse for wear and with even more impetus to get themselves back to the lodge and back to safety, because they don't know what the fuck is going on at this point.
Yeah, and get out they should, but there's a trail, as it happens, when they see daylight leading away from this building.
This is not the famous Oregon Trail. No one's dying of dysentery on this one, right?
Or it's not El Camino, where you're going, a bunch of, you know, religious types are going to like relive whatever it is that the trail is in Spain, where you're going on this expedition. They figure, okay, this is a trail, it's got to lead to civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, could they not be more wrong. They are progressively picked off by a group of backwoods, such as it is,
mm-hmm.
Hillbilly types. Transported into Europe. So this is not the usual Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, inbred hillbillies. Mm-hmm. This is a sort of spin on that with a group of, pagan-worshipping, isolationists mm-hmm. stuck out there who progressively picks them off.
In many ways, it kind of reminded me a bit of Baskin, another film that we podcasted way back when, in that sense, too. In the sense, you have these outsiders that are at the mercy of these...
Urban sophisticates, really. Yeah, like,
that are at the mercy of these pagans who are partaking in these ancient traditions to appease their gods. And needless to say, even though it is a mild spoiler alert, some of that does involve human sacrifice. And in one of the most affecting scenes in the entire movie, one of the members of the party, I'm not going to say who, is found... See, there's your passive voice
there you go.
is found in the exact same Jesus Christ pose with the exact same grievous bodily injuries as the elk that we saw earlier in the film. So it's like a tourniquet in the sense that it just keeps getting more tighter, and more, tighter and more and more eerie and bizarre and creepy, and the party starts getting smaller and smaller. Yes, there was a lot of internecine and squabbling beforehand, but, and that does remain, but at the same time, that so kind of has to give way to how are we going to survive? Who's going to survive?
And it should be said that the first hour, I would say, before this, things tend to, I guess, run out of steam, but the first hour I thought was just incredibly evocative as someone who, you know, enjoys camping.
One weekend been, every year, basically.
Well, yeah, but still, like...
you make it seem like, you know... Like you're
no, I'm not like a rugged outdoorsman, but as a kid, my parents took me camping all the time, and I was thinking a couple weeks ago, a couple of teenage girls were lost in the woods in Algonquin Provincial Park in Ontario, which is a massive park that's pretty... It is pretty remote. It's about, I would say, a 4 or 5 hour drive from Toronto. It's bigger than, I think, Rhode Island and Delaware, U.S. states combined. It's several thousand kilometers square. I want to say 7,000 or 8,000. These girls went missing, and you can take a turn and end up hundreds of kilometers from the nearest civilization. And I thought the directors handled this incredibly, where when they get lost, they really are lost. Mm-hmm. You, it's just like, at one point, one of the characters says, why don't we retrace our steps and go back to the sort of the mountainous badlands that they were from, which they first started their journey. But easier said than done.
Badlands. You look.
Is this a Springsteen song?
I was about to get into that. Yeah.
Okay, and there's like, you can't, it's easier said than done. You can't just, I mean, unless you have the most accurate GPS in order to be able to call on the Force Rangers for help, everything looks the friggin' same. There are no landmarks. The only thing you have to go by is these caveat symbols that are being placed for you by these guys who are going to kill you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only person they really could have called on for help in this case would have been the God of Thunder himself, Thor, you know? Not King Zimmon. It's not the demon, but yeah.
So as this progresses, I think to the extent that it works as an in-group, out-group dynamic, it's maybe less effective.
Yeah,
but as a Lost in the Woods movie, it is almost without parallel. So I wish they would have continued that ethos instead of getting the more supernatural elements involved, like the more...
Although I did appreciate that because, I mean, that brought into the realm of folk horror. And folk horror, I mean, anytime you have a horror film that rests upon some sort of ancient paganistic or Nordic ritual, whatever, I'm talking movies like The Wicker Man,
which you have to place in your top five UK horrors of
Ben,
all time.
Ben Wheatley's Kill List is another one, which is a movie that starts off in one direction and ends up as a folk horror, and it's fantastic. In fact, that new movie, Midsommar, is that how you pronounce it?
Midsommar,
that's directed by...
I believe it's Danish. It could be. Yeah, it's Nordic for some reason.
Right,
yeah.
The same director as Hereditary, is meant to be a sort of like an updating of The Wicker Man for the times we live in, so a new sort of folk horror. So, yeah. Now, how would you compare this to something like Rituals? I know you love that movie.
Oh, man. It's tough, because they're both like really dialogue-centric, male bonding, getaway-for-the-weekend type movies. And they're both, I mean, one plays, the Rituals movie plays upon indigenous folklore, a la the Manitou, that kind of thing, and invests heavily in... the fact that these guys are very arrogant, and being that they're men of science, they should not be able to be putting themselves in this kind of precarious situation. Well, that's interesting that both of them, I think, are very, very similar and very...
Well, the reason why I ask you that is because the filmmaker himself cited Rituals as a very heavy influence on this movie. So
yeah, I guess Rituals, the difference would have been they helicoptered those gentlemen into location to make it even seem more remote. But again, they really, I guess, tapped into that incredibly evocative, I guess it would be Canadian Shield scenery and Rituals. Although with Rituals, I don't think that title tipped off the viewer as much as The Ritual, because Rituals, you're not sure, because it was pre-social media, pre-internet, what the film was about. It's a Canadian tax shelter horror movie, but you don't know much about what it's... the narrative. But The Ritual, when you're reading about it, five guys go on a trek into the woods, it tips the hand a little bit. And it does. We're going to find some folkloric elements.
Totally. Although, I mean, that could be construed as the ritual they were going to do to...
cleanse themselves of their buddy's death.
Because
you could see it coming.
Could see it coming. And that unfortunately is to this film's debit.
Yeah, because they sort of traverse two different worlds. They start in modernity and end in kind of... I guess almost the witch-like territory where they have these characters who are living in just these primitive conditions, worshiping this almost like this half-human, deer.
Unbelievable creature, I gotta say.
Oh, the creature was great. It's almost like a...
It's like a horse with an actual human stuck to it. It's almost like a reverse Minotaur.
I was going to say like the Jägermeister logo.
Kind of is.
Yeah.
And kind of is.
And they are almost sympathetic characters because they are as in fear of this deity as the victims are in fear of them. So they're really just transferring their fears onto another fear. So they want to just stay alive by presenting this god with victims. So they actually...
You're talking about the worshipper of the...
They bring the victims water and there. Some of them are sympathetic to them and say, listen, it's almost like the Auschwitz guard, I was just following orders. Like, they seem so willing to do the bidding of this god.
Oh yeah, so deferential and
they're
almost, and everything.
They're deferential and you almost feel sorry for them, but not really.
I mean, well, not all of them, but a couple of them are a little more sympathetic than others.
Yeah, and as you get to further into the film, again, two of the initial five are left remaining, and they have to escape from their confines. And this is revealed in a very ambiguous way of what happens to them, and we can't spoil it. So I guess is this the point in the podcast where we talk about what we've learned?
This will be the time when you talk about what you've learned, because I didn't really learn that much. But I'm curious to hear what you learned, and I will comment on it. So go ahead, Chris. What did you learn?
Well, this... Kungsleden, or the King's Trail in Sweden here, it is not actually filmed in Northern Europe cost reasons. And this sort of tipped me off as I was watching the credits roll, and there's a bunch of Escu and Iscu names, and I'm thinking like Escu is like the Romanian surname. I was thinking, okay,
in my home country.
Yes, and I was thinking this is the place where...
Because I am half Romanian.
Yes, and this is where like Gone to Seed action heroes go to find tax shelter. And
we're looking at you, Mr. Seagal.
Yes, who's been Me Too'd, I think, several times, and his day will come.
He's been Me Too'd from the very beginning of his career. I mean, he's the original Me Too. I don't know when, but his day is going to come. His day of reckoning is coming.
And he's probably like... raise the ire of toupee wearing Me Too, so we'd take him to task for that rug he's wearing. But
we'll be taking him to task one of these days very soon, but that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Very oblique
and
about
so
that.
You could probably fact check this, but I don't think this was necessarily filmed in Sweden, but it doesn't matter. It brings into contrast like the in-group, out-group dynamics that you might experience in a different world. So... Yeah, it's almost like I'm looking at you like Howling 2 in a way, where you have a Westerner going into this weird, off the beaten path locale in the Carpathian Mountains where this may be. So I thought that was very interesting in terms of like a bunch of these guys bonding and then coming to loggerheads as they decide what to do, which is again par for the course. I'm not sure like to what extent I could be relied upon for my judgment, because the one guy who's the leader is hellbent.
Hutch
says that like he is pretty damn sure that over the ridge where you see the sun, and that's he's using that as a form of direction. He's
bit of a landmark, a barometer.
And like he's determined that this is the right way, and he's trying to get them to follow his lead. But some of them are a little skeptical and going like, can we really trust this guy? And they start to splinter and go their separate ways. And really, like, how much can you invest in your friend's knowledge and abilities? Especially someone who's never really demonstrated himself as to be this savvy outdoorsman. Pretty much, you're going to descend into dog-eat-dog, almost like, pseudo-libertarian territory here. Like, what point does staying together... become your detriment as opposed to aiding in your survival? I don't know. I don't know if I would... I can't trust my own judgment in this regard. Like, especially as their foodstuffs start disappearing, and they're handing out like little protein bar snacks, and they're hungry, they're tired, they're miserable, and they're not that far removed from civilization, or so they would think.
Mm-hmm. And yet, they are very far removed.
They are indeed.
So close, yet so far away. So star rating for the ritual, Chris.
Well, as a lost in the woods exercise in male bonding, male dissolution, toxic masculinity, I would say, well, there's an excellent Canadian film that I've lauded in the past called White Raven, which treads very similar characteristics, although it doesn't lean as heavily upon the supernatural elements as maybe this one does. So it more travels in a gritty realism, but it's the same kind of thing where a bunch of people go out into the woods in BC, get lost, and start tearing it at one another's throat. So as an exercise like that, this is a film in two parts. The first part, purely as a Lost in the Woods piece, it trumps anything that the filmmakers of Blair Witch managed to conjure up.
Without a doubt, yeah.
This is terrifying woods, and they could have just imagined it as a kind of existentialist open water piece where one of them just progressively dies one after the other as they're lost in the woods. That could have made an amazing film on its own.
Mm-hmm.
For that, for the first hour, I'm going to give this 5-star. But then as it descends into Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw,
folk horror once again.
Folk horror, yeah. Guy who lives out in the boonies, tourist trap kind of elements. It loses its luster and falls to maybe a 3. So I maybe split the difference and give it like 3 3/4, because this is a solid effort. And I came upon this film through Netflix because it seemed like the only thing that would really tap into the interests I have, which I really like realism and I really like camping. So this married the two, and it followed on the heels of Backcountry, which we both loved and podcasted, where you're lost in the Canadian wilderness. But yeah, the back end did not draw me in as much, and it was not nearly as impactful. So 3 for that, 5 for the beginning, 3 3/4 roughly. It's still a solid effort, but again, to quote your quote from the 7 Bloodstained Orchids in our earlier podcast, destination leaves a little to be desired, but the journey and getting lost therein, bang on. Like, yeah, fabulous filmmaking.
And that's the thing with me too. I mean, I always appreciate folk horror. I love old arcane rituals and so on and so forth, and practices and whatnot and beliefs. And yet I've seen so many movies where they've done folk horror so much better, so much more evocative, so much more effective, so much more chilling, despite the fact that the creature was pretty fucking amazing. I will say that. So I can't really divide into two. I'm just going to look at it as a totality, as a whole, as a piece of folk horror, and I'm going to give it 3 1/4 stars.
Yeah, fair enough. There are really elements of the witch, even with this one. And I think there is the Beelzebub sort of goat. I don't know if you want to call it a character from The Witch. It has its exemplars here. But when they open that elk reindeer carcass and the viscera are spilling out in the middle of these woods, and they're increasingly coming upon these signposts warning them about what lies ahead, I thought, man, that was really amazing. And they know their fate as well. So these, they are not naifs just going in. They, first off, I don't know whether they thought they would just die alone and starve to death, but they soon realize that they're being hunted. It's like almost predator style, that there's nowhere to run to, nowhere to hide, there's nowhere to go. Like, what can you do? And they really play on this so well. And I really wish that this had taken a different turn, as the principles take a wrong turn.
Exactly. I was going to say, if the principles would have taken a different turn, then maybe the movie would have been different. But they took another turn, and they ended up backwoods
It just seems like it just seems like that wasn't well developed enough. And maybe I just don't associate, maybe it's just my inability to associate Sweden with a bunch of backwoods bald Hills Have Eyes types.
Like,
I just don't agree. But then again, would I have criticized them for setting this in North America and saying, oh, I've seen these backwoods types before? So when you're displaced geographically, it usually should add a little bit of heightened interest, because you're in somewhere you haven't seen. As you alluded to, Baskin, you're like, you're disoriented because you're in the rural
part of Turkey,
and all you're familiar with is Istanbul, and you don't know what
and Constantinople.
World. Yeah, Constantinople. You're not going to sing that. Actually, you don't know where you're headed, and so they are leading you in a completely different world. But this world that they set up, at least for the beginning.
At least I'm not singing the theme song to a different world. You know?
Oh my God.
The Cosby Show, got off a Cosby Show spinoff from all those years ago.
So. Although I did have a crush on the indigenous Native American / black chick who starred in it.
Oh, Whitney. Was it Whitney? That was the main character?
No, it was one with curly hair.
Yeah, yeah. But then, of course, there was a young Marissa
Tomei
as well.
This is a really arcane, speaking of being led down the wrong path, discussion of 80s shitty sitcoms. But
so perhaps this is a good time for us to wrap things up before
indeed hopefully you continue to enjoy and appreciate our 3 to 5 star podcast. We hope you think five. New podcast episodes uploaded for your listening enjoyment every Friday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.